you wear when you go get x-rayed at the dentist so you don't get sterilized. That was all me. That was my gig, you know? So there's his resume. Carrie's resume, it's confusing. You know, the guy, you know, is like Ron Kovac from Oliver Stone's movie. You know what I mean? He's like born on the 4th of July. He goes over all gung-ho and naive and ignorant, and he comes back, you know, enlightened, and he becomes Vietnam Veterans Against the War spokesman extraordinaire and all this. You know, and he's a flip-flopper. And then you've got W, who's the devil himself. So the thing is that, you know, you've got this bizarre little circus, you know, where on the one hand you have Nader, who is like a cross between the Lone Ranger and Superman. Then you've got Carrie, who's, you know, hell, Carrie is whatever, you know, Carrie goes whichever way the wind blows. And I'll get into that in a minute. And then W, like I said, he's the devil himself. So, you know, it's a very confusing time. Because you know that Carrie has the advertising budget, you know that Carrie has the backing, but you know that Ralph Nader is right. So you're afraid that you're going to tip the election to W. But then you're hoping for a biblical miracle. You're hoping that Carrie comes to his senses and just drops out of the race at the last minute. You know, it's all so maddening. What I wish is that George Soros or some billionaire would give Ralph Nader Britney Spears' advertising budget, and then hopefully in the next 30 days we jack up the IQ of the American voter, we sweep Nader in there, and we can finally have an end to the drug war, an end to the Middle Eastern war, all of them. We can finally spend the money on ourselves. We can get free universal health care. We can get rid of this Patriot Act. We can finally make life better. Because with Kerry, at best, with Kerry, you'll get the status quo. With W, things will obviously get a bit worse, maybe even more. But again, in Kerry's case, like I said before, Kerry goes whichever way the wind blows, which means that we have to make sure the winds of change blow his sorry ass in the right direction, in the direction toward helping people instead of hurting people or just outright slaughtering people because he's trying to satisfy, you know, the macho and the ignorant, you know. I mean, thus far, you know, we've seen Kerry go out of his way to appeal to a very tiny minority out of those who are eligible to vote. But according to Michael Moore's book, Dude, Where's My Country, he says explicitly that 60% of the American voter electorate is made up of non-whites, gays, and women. So it seems like to me, if Kerry actually wants to win this thing, he better start saying what that 60% wants to hear. Well, as it stands, he's trying to satisfy Bubba and Jethro.
Well, let me interrupt because we are having some response from our chat room. Cyber Sorcerer says that in his opinion, society needs someone to manage it. The Metal Master says there's no such thing as free universal health care.
True. Somebody's
got to
pay
for
that.
Yes.
Somebody's look in Canada. I mean, a lot of these Canadians are coming down here for operations because the Canadian health care system is a train wreck up there. I mean, the government can't pay for everything. I mean, that's like asking, having a government stop spending is like asking a nun to have sex. I mean, that's not going to happen.
No.
I mean,
well, nuns have sex, though.
Not real ones. Not real ones.
I mean, look at it this way. The government pay for everything. So let's lose some of the things that they ain't got no business spending any money on, like nuclear missiles, the School of the Americas, Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo Bay. I mean, all these atrocities are paid for with our taxes, you know, so cut them out the budget. You know, I'm sure you've seen this bumper sticker before. The bumper sticker that goes, it'd be a beautiful day when the Pentagon has to hold a bake sale to raise money and the schools have all the money that they need. You know, so no, you're not going to be able to pay for everything, but you pay for the right things. You pay for the things that people need.
Well, the Republicans are saying they're paying for the Republicans are saying they're paying for the right things by paying for this, you know, military buildup and all the armor and all this for the war on terror, and they're tying in Iraq. And then you got the Democrats over here saying no, you're fighting in the wrong war. The war should be in Afghanistan. And you also got to pay for some money for health care. And we got all this other stuff we got to pay for, and bail out Social Security, and the deficit's going through the roof.
Well, Sean, so the Metal Master comes up with a good idea. He says the government doesn't pay for anything; the taxpayer does. We, the people,
and we're paying for all this. Just like that.
Why is the Metal Master making a distinction that doesn't need to be? I mean, you know, it's like if he's making the connection that we are the taxpayer, we are the people, we are the government, then what's the problem? You know, I think the problem is the fear that. You know, even more powerful than the fear of going to hell after you die is the fear of a broken heart, the fear of being betrayed. You know, these folks that are so tax-phobic, you know, they figure, oh, well, you know, if we do this, then people are going to abuse the system. Well, yeah, but you know what? I'd rather somebody abuse the system than abuse somebody else's body.
I mean, given the choice between Abu Harib and a welfare cheat, I'll take the welfare cheat any day of the week. You know, and besides, people haven't looked at my tax plan. You know, they've heard all this nonsense about a flat tax and all these other wacky, crazy schemes to try and, you know, coddle the rich and whatnot. No, forget all that. Here's the tax plan that I laid out in print a long time ago. If you make less than $100,000 a year net, not gross, net, if you make $100K net or less a year, you pay zero taxes except for sales tax, which wouldn't my, if I was president, I wouldn't raise too much. The only sales tax I'd have would be like gambling tax, gas tax, you know, vices,
yeah, but
stuff
those
like
taxes
that.
Are set by the state, not the government, yeah. Unless you're going to impose a federal tax like George Bush floated a few months ago.
Well, you know, it would be a pittance at most. Mm-hmm. And then from, you know, $100,000 a year to $1 million a year, you would pay 10% off the top of the gross. If you made $1 million to $1 billion a year, it'd be 20% off the top of the gross. If you made $1 billion plus, it'd be 30% off the top of the gross. Now, you do that, plus you cut the military budget in half, you'll have all the money that you need. Now, here's the thing. Right now, the military-industrial complex's budget, $400 billion of our taxes. You chop that bad boy in half, you got $200 billion. We are still outspending the nearest superpower by billions, plural. Okay, as in more than one.
There are no more superpowers. We're it.
Yeah,
but you know what I mean, though. The idea is that we would outspend Russia, we would outspend China, we would outspend all the other players. So the idea here is that we chop the military budget in half and we tax the rich. There we go. We will still be safe because no one will come after somebody spending $200 billion a year on defense. We'll still be safe. And on the other hand, you know, we'll have all the money for free healthcare, free daycare, free college, and free public transportation, which is all we need. Personally, I would cut every other form of welfare. The way I figure, we don't even need food stamps. You know why? Food Not Bombs. There's a great organization out there called Food Not Bombs, run by Keith McHenry out of San Francisco. Granted, they're diehard vegans and vegetarians, but hey, it's a small price to pay for free food. I'm a meat eater myself, but what can you do? You know?
I think we need some kind of a catch for some of these people who are on a hard time. I used to live in Chicago, not too far from Cabrini Green, and you need
Cabrini
something.
Cabrini Green.
Cabrini Green. It's the
Jesus.
Housing. It's all tore down.
Yeah, I know.
But it's
tore it down?
Oh, yeah. They tore it
down. Cabrini Green doesn't exist anymore?
No, it doesn't.
Where do these people live?
Then low-rise housing now. They got rid of the high-rise housing in favor of low-rise housing.
They're not all mass homeless, are you?
What?
They have some place to stay, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is years ago. They rebuilt
thing.
But
Jeez,
Cabrini
you scared
Green
the hell
has,
out
we
of
know,
me.
But no, I think we need some kind of safety net for these people, and not a free ride for years for these people. I think like a 2-year program where you go on food stamps, you go on some kind of assistance for 2 years, and you got to get off. You got to get a job. And Mary has something where the government could help pay for some child care, so you can go to work full time, and then you get pulled off of that program. That's what I'm thinking. And I think that's where Bednarik was, too. The government should have a limited influence in our lives, limited to no influence.
Well, the influence that the government would have in my world, you know, if I were, you know, so blessed as to actually get an Oval Office, you know, the government would not be interfering any more than it is right now. It would simply imagine, how do I put this? You have a weight sensitive scale, and no sooner than you take one weight off than you put the next weight on, and you don't even notice the difference. Because it's the same weight, and you've made the switch so quick that there's no jump, there's no difference, there's no switch one way or the other, mm-hmm. or no bump one way or the other. It would be the same thing in terms of government interference. I dare say, with my case, it'd be, if I was president, there'd be even less government interference because I would decriminalize drugs and decriminalize prostitution. Notice I said decriminalize, not legalize, big difference. Because the key here is to keep Uncle Sam from being a pimp. The key here is to keep Uncle Sam from being a dealer. Because in the case of hemp, for instance, the best case scenario is for people to be allowed to grow it in their own backyard. Libertarians got that right, because if you allow, what is it, R.J. Reynolds, is that the company out of Virginia or North Carolina that does the cigarettes and whatnot?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Don't let them touch marijuana. They will ruin it. They will destroy it. The only path, the only way out of this is if we decriminalize it.
Let individuals grow it themselves?
Thank you.
And take it away from the corporations? Are they going to let that happen? You think they'll let... Really, think of how much control over this country's corporations have. These huge corporations. You think they're going to let us, Joe Sixpack, whatever they are, you know, grow, you know, in our yards. I mean,
well, see, that's why I would be, you know, a good commander in chief, because the minute they tried something skanky and sinister and scandalous, I'd be on them like white on rice, like Batman on the mugger.
But here's you're the saying thing, cut though, the military budget. Now you want to stick the military on R.J. Reynolds.
No. I didn't. Cut doesn't mean eliminate.
Yeah.
There would still be a force out there, but the force would not be torturing and raping people like they're doing in Abu Ghraib. They'd be stopping the corporations, like you said, from messing with the folks growing it in the backyard. Now, remember your history. In World War II, they had those things called Hemp for Victory. They had those, we would call it PSAs today, but back then, you know, it was like on a newsreel, Hemp for Victory.
Yeah.
And the idea was you were supposed to grow hemp in your backyard, make some hemp so that the boys across, you know, boys in the European theater and, the, you know, whatnot, if they're fighting the Nazis, they could have plenty of hemp rope, plenty of hemp canvas to work with. In fact, true story, George Bush the elder, George Bush's daddy, he was a naval pilot in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe...
He got shot down.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's this whole
story
here.
Oh, no,
you
can't read from his book, are you?
Well, let's see here. I'm trying to... I don't want to go from hazy memory, because if I have the source, it's always best to go with an expert if you can.
Well, while you're looking this up, I want to mention in the
chat
room...
The chat room's going nuts.
Yes, it is. And Cyber Sorcerer... We as a people don't have all the information. Let me tell you, those huge corporations have more control over this world than you know.
Exactly.
And more than the government.
Never give up. Never surrender. If they got control, you fight back. Fight like a superhero. Fight like a samurai.
I don't know how you could sick the military on a corporation. I don't know how you could wage war on the American people like that. I don't know. I just have a thing about that. Send our troops over to R.J.R. Reynolds,
yeah,
headquarters
really.
In Virginia, and firing on them. I don't know. You don't believe in the black helicopter thing, do you?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, it's in how it's
don't
done.
Tell me this.
How it's done.
Are you over there with Art Bell?
Where is that story?
Anyway.
No, I mean, it's – well, let me put it this way. The one shining glimmer of hope that I found in John Kerry's platform was when he mentioned – and I wish I had it with me, but he mentioned how he wanted to explore non-lethal weaponry. And I think that's the path we need to go in. Instead of bullets, tranquilizer darts. Instead of explosives, knockout gas. Mm-hmm. We need to train the military to operate like Batman. Non-lethal. The key
well, we
is
have that
non-lethal.
Stuff now.
Well, but it's not mainstream.
Yeah.
It's the exception to the rule. I interviewed Scott Ritter, who was the former weapons inspector of Iraq, and he wrote that book, Frontier Justice, and he exposed how, you know, there was no threat out of Iraq to speak of. And he told me over the phone how he was part of the Marine operation in Mogadishu a couple of years back, you know, the whole Black Hawk Down thing. They had a thing. Now, I swear, this is going to sound like science fiction, but I've got confirmation of this. I mean, this is, you know, I think you know what I'm about to say. The sticky foam?
Yeah.
They have this stuff. It's great. It's like a fire extinguisher. You strap it on your back. You look like Paste Pot Pete from Marvel Comics. And you're sitting there spraying this stuff, and it's like white goo. It's like cookie dough. And you spray it, and they sprayed it on the folks in Somalia there when they were rioting. And basically, it will, like, immobilize you in what is a substance that is as hard as a plaster cast when you break your leg. And it operates very much like the web shooter from Spider-Man.
Hmm.
So the idea here is that it can be done. The issue is that do you have the political will to go through all the resistance and make sure that what needs to get funded gets funded? And then from there, you have to totally and completely change the attitude of the military itself on a cultural level, and particularly on a spiritual level. Did you guys see the movie The Last Samurai?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
The idea of the samurai is that it's not, well, it's like they tell you in Little League, you know, it's not whether or not you win or lose. It's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. We need to quit thinking in terms of, oh, we need to be a demon, we need to be bigger and badder than the enemy in order to make sure we win. We need to get out of that mode of thinking. That Machiavellian mode of thinking is the reason why Amnesty International is on us like flies on feces as it is. What we need is to adopt the ethos and the code of the samurai. We need to teach our soldiers to be like the samurai. Samurai
using non-lethal
weaponry.
We tried that in Iraq and they killed
weaponry.
A bunch of them, didn't they?
Hmm?
We tried that in Iraq and they killed a bunch of them. Well, trying to be all nice and friendly to these Iraqis, and they killed them and had their heads taken off. I mean,
we weren't. I mean, the whole history of Iraq is just. I mean, for Iraq, you'd have to go back to the early '60s.
Yeah.
You'd have to go back to when Saddam Hussein was just this little piddly old dude, you know, with ambition, delusions of grandeur, and then basically the CIA wanted Iraq's oil, so they sent in Saddam. And they had him basically act as a plant. You know, they had him collect a bunch of names of folks that, you know, would present a problem, quote unquote, down the line. He failed at first, but then the second attempt Qasim was his name, to overthrow Qasim, succeeded, and then Saddam rose up the ladder. Now, the idea here is that, granted, the CIA couldn't predict the future back then. They didn't have a crystal ball. They didn't know that Saddam Hussein was going to become a problem decades down the road, but they should have known better.
Well,
you cannot go into a situation like that. You can't be manipulating people's elections violently and then calling yourself a force for democracy. You know, there's a guy named Mark Zeppesauer. He wrote a book called The CIA's Greatest Hits, and a lot of his research is taken from William Bloom's work. You should find those names online, William Bloom and Mark Zeppesauer. That's Zeppezauer. And he can tell you flat out that for the past 50 years, the CIA has had a worse track record than the Nazis and the Red Guard combined, primarily going through the so-called Third World, rigging these elections or violently sabotaging them firsthand, and then putting these puppets in charge that wind up killing folks over the course of decades.
Well, now
the sickest example is the Congo with Mobutu, Patrice Lumumba. All Patrice Lumumba wanted for the Congo was for the Congo to be as egalitarian economically as Amsterdam is now. That's all he wanted. And what he got for his trouble, the CIA tortured him to death, and they put Mobutu in charge, and for the next 30, 40-odd years, Mobutu raped the Congo, and he was so hated. How hated was he? He was so hated that he had to live in a barge in the middle of a river because folks were trying to get at him just that bad.
Debbie?
You're listening to Subject to Discussion on LVRocks.com with Sean O'Mac and me, Debbie Hall. Special guest tonight, Saab Loftin, writer for the Las Vegas City Life, as well as his own program, the Saab Loftin Power Hour on KLAV 1230 AM, Thursdays, 9 p.m. Pacific Time. I want to read in the chat room, which is a really sparking a discussion. I was trying to explain to Saab in the car about the chat room, so you're getting the idea. And Cyber Sorcerer said the biggest obstacle is religion.
Huh.
And
Amen.
But then, no, then the Metal Master says not religion, religious extremism. And then it was like 95% of all devoutly religious people are not the problem. Let's see. And they were talking about it's the small minority of religious zealots that are the problem. Now, this is, they're talking
Absolutely.
About war.
All those wars are fought over in the name of God. Over there.
Yeah, but the church needs money too. I mean, you know, the church has that tax exempt status for a reason. No, it's, you got to look higher than that. I know that's all folks here. You know, they're so afraid that they're going to be in a building at the moment in which some plane crashes into it, and all they're thinking of is trying to circumvent or short circuit the supposedly fundamentalist motivations of the folks therein. But what about Timothy McVeigh? You know, what, he wasn't motivated by religion. What was he motivated by? You know. I mean, the thing is that, you know, you gotta figure that there are two types of terrorists. There are the terrorists that are so poor, so desperate that, you know, they'll do anything, you know, or there are the folks that are highly educated, and they are so educated to the point that they realize the plight of the poor, and they figure that the way to help the poor is to, you know, conduct acts of terrorism. Now, people dismiss the whole idea of emulating the samurai, emulating comic book superheroes, emulating Starfleet from Star Trek. But let me tell you something. At that moment in which that decision is being made to go bomb somebody or to go turn yourself into a bomb and then go bomb somebody, at the moment in which that decision is made, frustration, desperation creeps into the picture. And you start to figure, well, I could write a letter to my congressman. I could get out there and protest and get my ass beat and get thrown in jail for God knows how long. I could have my career ruined. I could lose all my money. I could do this, that, that. But I prefer the quick and easy path. I prefer to go blow something up. I prefer to go shoot somebody. Now, you know, if you really have a problem with that approach, then you better emulate the superhero community because they don't kill people. You know, do the homework. You know, the only characters in comic books who kill are, like, you know, the Punisher. And the consensus of the superhero community is that the character, the Punisher, it does not represent them. He is a liability. You know, so the thing is that, you know, that approach, that whole ends justify the means approach, that's what you're really afraid of. That's the core of the problem. That's the heart of capitalism right there. Oh, well, you know, I could help this homeless family, but then I wouldn't be able to afford my pimped out ride. You know what I'm saying? I got to have my bling bling. You know what I'm saying? You see, at the moment in which those decisions are made, you can do the naive Jimmy Stewart, Frank Capra, whimsical, old-fashioned thing that is supposedly out of style and will only get you used. Or you can do the hardcore, extreme, militant thing. Yeah, you know, make sure everything macho, you know. I mean, do you see what I mean? There is a schism there. You know, I mean, yeah, sure, you know, the samurai at the end of The Last Samurai could have survived, but then they wouldn't have taught the lesson that they taught. You see, you don't always have to win in order to win. Look at Goldwater. Goldwater got pasted. He got his ass beat in 1964 by LBJ. But guess what?
What?
10 years later, The Punisher came out. 10 years after that, Reagan was in office. Because Goldwater lost, he started a movement, and as a result, decades down the line, you had the new right. Now, I'm not championing them, mind you, but the idea here is that that is an example of how it works. You don't always have to win in order to win. Sometimes you win down the road. Sometimes you win in the long term. A left-wing example would be Dennis Kucinich. Back in the late 70s, he tried his damnedest to save the one municipal power company that provided cheap power for the people of Cleveland, Ohio. And this big, huge corporation called CEI, I believe the name of it was trying to gobble it all up like Pac-Man. Well, Dennis Kucinich would not sell out. They tried everything. They tried to break him. They tried to do him like they did Preston Tucker. They tried to do him like they did Paul Robeson. Didn't work. He stayed strong, like a samurai. And even though Cleveland, Ohio went in default, and even though they ran him out of town, he still held his head up high with honor, like a samurai. Years later, a reporter from Cleveland came to Kucinich and said, "Hey, look, man, the state of Ohio realizes how wrong it was. The state of Ohio now realizes how right you were for not selling out in the first place, for not selling out back then. Come on back here." And now there's a commendation, or whatever they call it, some plaque in City Hall in Cleveland thanking Dennis Kucinich and basically begging his forgiveness. You know, it's a total case of the ant and the grasshopper. You know, so sometimes your victories are long term. I think the problem right now is that, you know, there's a thing called the Vietnam Syndrome. And this is documented. Ask Noam Chomsky about this. Professor Noam Chomsky got more honorary degrees than you can shake a stick at. He speaks of how there was a white paper that leaked from the government that said that in cases in which you're afraid of a public backlash, you better make sure that any international military intervention is quick and easy and up against a smaller enemy so that no one back home gets an idea to take to the streets and protest. Well, the problem with that approach is, of course, that turns America into a what? Turns it into a bully. Is it any wonder why folks hate us and are willing to do those Machiavellian things, those desperate things to get back at us? Now, if you want things to change, live by example. And if you want things to change, quit laughing at the ideals of the samurai, of the superhero, of Starfleet, and start emulating them, and hopefully they will catch on. And if they do, then no one will have to be surprised, worry about being surprised about plane crashing into their building anymore.
Well, then actually, let me jump in. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, because we
have a comment from the chat room.
Yes, go ahead.
Comic fanboy says, do you think, now getting back to the presidential race, do you think Bush is acting in a superhero way in his war on terror?
Bush is a toad. Cheney's the one in charge. Halliburton is in charge of him. You know, it's funny. There's a scene in Spawn when Martin Sheen's character hardwires his bad heart into a nuclear missile silo, and that if he has a heart attack and dies, and he flatlines, and that's supposed to set off this nuclear whatever or this bacteriological whatever. That reminds me of Carrie. So if you want to know where Carrie fits in the comic book pantheon, that's where he fits in. I mean, the bottom line
Wait a minute. So Carrie is like the Lex Luthor, and George Bush is like Superman, or what?
No.
Actually, in the comics, Lex Luthor is president of the United States as we speak, so they maybe foretell good things for John Kerry. I don't know.
That's right.
It would be more accurate to say that W was Igor and Cheney was Frankenstein, because, you know, that's the best way to describe the relationship. W's job is to appeal charming and charismatic, and he does it very well. He has this very Andy Griffin thing about him, you know, and it works. You know, Chris Matthews from MSNBC, you know that guy. The guy, you know, well, he says, you know, well, George W. Bush is the kind of guy you want to have a beer with. Well, that's great. Go have a beer with him, but don't put his ass in charge of the most powerful political entity in this planet's history. That's insane. Okay, you don't need to be chummy with a guy that damn bad. You know what I'm saying? Now, Ralph Nader, for instance, is drab. and he's boring, and he's antisocial, and he's alienating. You know, I mean, the guy looks like your high school principal, but guess what? He's the best guy for the job. We need, again, to start thinking in terms of the election as job interviews. Look for the resume, look at the platform, look at who's most qualified. Not for who's most popular, not for who's most likely to win, okay? This is not gambling, okay? The election booth is not your bookie. Okay. You know,
yes.
I don't care if Kerry has the advertising budget. I don't care if the odds are in Kerry's favor. You know, the fact of the matter is that there are microscopic hints of promise in Kerry's platform. But that's, I tell you what, if you try and get a job, as hard as it is right now for those that are unemployed, try and get a job with a half-assed resume and see how far it gets you. Kerry doesn't even have a half-assed resume. I mean, Kerry's in there talking about bringing the troops home in 4 years. Well, how many folks are supposed to die in those 4 years? Kerry gave this speech when he was part of the veterans, Vietnam veterans against the war and all that. And what was that line? He goes, oh, how can you ask a man to be the last person to die? Well, John, are you listening? How can you ask that? Have you forgotten? You know what John Kerry reminds me of in terms of science fiction and whatnot? Mm. Anakin Skywalker. Because he starts off okay, and then he falls
evil.
From grace.
Yeah, but
and he falls hard too, don't he?
Yes.
You can't just expect if he does get elected president, you can't expect him just to turn around and pull all the troops the
Why
next
not?
Day.
No.
You can't let that country fall into disarray. I mean,
why would be in disarray?
Their country's a mess over there. I mean, Colin Powell's on Late Edition with the Wolf Blitzer Sunday. He even admitted that the country's a mess. It's worse than it's the administration's making it look. I mean, you can't just pull out and here you go. I mean, they don't have any of these troops trained. No, the police aren't trained. The troops aren't trained. And they got an election coming up in January. We can't just pull out of there. You know, we got Alawi trying to get elected. I don't know. I just think.
Well, we have a question.
He's got to finish what. If he gets in, he's got to finish what Bush started. If Bush gets reelected, he's got to finish it, get out of there, and then that's it.
Well, here's what President Lofton would do. I get in there, the first thing I'd do, I would evacuate all the armed personnel. Doctors, nurses, humanitarians, whatnot, anyone suicidal enough to stay in that quagmire. Feel free. I'll give you what you need. I won't give you as much money as you've been getting because, you know, again, we need to cut back. But the fact of the matter is that what's needed now is an example. You know, granted, there are going to be some violent folks out there. We started it. We stirred up that bee's nest, and the bees aren't going to be calmed down anytime soon. But the fact of the matter is that these are human beings. Now, keep in mind, if this was America, if someone invaded America and didn't want to leave right away, and they said, oh, well, you can't trust those Americans because they're too savage and too hot-tempered and too hot under the collar, and, you know, if we leave abruptly, then those Americans, you know, might start killing each other and eating each other. Well, you know what? That's just the risk you have to take. And the fact of the matter is that most Americans would feel very patronized, very condescended if some superior military force came down, invaded us, occupied us, and then wouldn't leave right away because supposedly we were untrustworthy with power. Supposedly we were unworthy of being left alone. I mean, you know, one of the libertarians' biggest things is, you know, live and let live. Well, we need to, you know, live by that and leave Iraq alone.
Saab, we need to interrupt because, again, the chat room, you're definitely getting a response. One person wanted to know if you were a Nader supporter, but before you answer, let me read what the Metal Master says. Saab Lofton is a self-professed communist, yet in one of his articles he espouses the virtues of social disobedience. Russia, China, Cuba, and other communist regimes in the past repeatedly cracked down on demonstrators and people who have a different view of government. Can Saab explain in more detail his definition of communism and how he reconciles the seemingly incongruity of communism and social disobedience?
Certainly.
Please.
It only seems like an incongruity because most people get their news source from corporate networks. Now, the last thing the corporations want to do is share the wealth, so obviously they're going to make communism look as bad as possible. And the situation isn't as simple as that. There are as many kinds of communists as there are Christians. You got Presbyterians, Methodists, Lutherans, Catholics, Mormons, and I know I'm missing some folks, but we ain't got all night. You get the idea. There are plenty of Christians out there, plenty of different types of Christians. There are plenty of different types of Muslims out there, Shiite, Sunni, the Nation of Islam variety, etc. So you got a wide variety. The unfortunate thing is that history has not been accurately and fully told. Right after the Russian Revolution, America and England tag-teamed and went into Russia and basically created the same situation that you can find in the movie Attack of the Clones. They so remember in Attack of the Clones, the Star Wars saga, they so dilapidated the Jedi to the point where there was none left, so that by the time the Emperor took hold, there was nobody to stop it. Same thing happened in Russia. By the time the Russians fought off the civil war that was instigated by the Americans and the English right around 1919 or so, the Russians were dilapidated, and that left them wide open for Stalin's dictatorial ass. So it'd be more accurate to say that China and North Korea and Russia, these are Stalinist countries. The difference between a communist and a Stalinist, I guess, would be the communist believes in civil liberties and the Stalinists don't. And the reason why the Stalinists don't believe in civil liberties is for the same reason why W doesn't believe in allowing the terrorists a fair trial or, what's the word I'm looking for? Abstinence from the death penalty. I mean, the idea, abstinence. Well, the idea is that, you know, W would say, no, we can't serve legal papers to the terrorists. We have to destroy them. And no, we can't put them in jail. We have to kill them, etc. Well, it's the ends justify the means argument. It's Machiavelli. Well, that's pure Stalinism. Stalin figures that the poor must be fed and housed so bad. This is so important to the point where if we got to kill somebody to do it, we'll do it. If we got to lock up somebody to do it, we'll do it. It's the Punisher approach. It's the Wolverine approach. It's the anti-hero approach. And again, even though it's going to seem naive and weak and vulnerable to folks, the fact of the matter is if you want things to change, you want things to improve, you got to steer away from the Punisher way of doing things and lean yourself more toward the Lone Ranger way of doing things. And what's the difference? One of my fantasies has always been to be in charge of the police academy so that no cop can get their badge without taking one of my classes. And I would teach them the difference between the Lone Ranger and the Punisher. The Lone Ranger shot to wound only. The Punisher, hell, he'll kill anybody gets in his way.
You're listening
That's
to
the difference between a communist and a Stalinist.
Let me interrupt. You're listening to Subject to Discussion with Sean O'Mac and me, Debbie Hall. The toll-free number to call in if you'd like to join in the discussion with our special guest, Saab Lofton, is 1-866-587-6257. You're listening on lvrocks.com. You can join us in the chat room if you like. Now, I would like to bring this up because you keep talking about taking action. You know, there has been such a push this year about getting people to register to vote and then to actually vote. But on Oprah today, they actually had a woman, I'm going to guess early 40s, who said, you know, if I lost the right to vote, I would not fight to get it back. Hmm. How do you respond?
Wait, who was this woman?
She was on Oprah. She was part of Oprah's audience because Oprah had presented a number of celebrities working. You know, there's a number of ad campaigns about getting people to register to vote. You can't go to a grocery store without somebody wanting you to register to vote. You can't go to a fair. But they had this woman who went on camera, like I said, early 40s, African-American woman who said, you know, if I lost the right to vote, I would not fight to get it back.
Sounds like a very depressed woman. You know, that's the reason why I'm a Trekkie, because Trek is all about hope. And one thing I brought up on my radio show, I think it was last week, you know, count how many positive visions of the future Hollywood has produced. I can think of a handful, maybe. Babylon 5 and The Fifth Element are iffy. They seem to be more extrapolations of the now than utopian futures. Star Trek, obviously. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, though it be a comedy, it showed an extremely utopian future. But 99.9% of the movies that Hollywood produces about humanity's future is negative. Mad Max, there's nothing left. Terminator, there's very little left. And so on. All these negative images. We're constantly being told that the end is nigh. Well, hell, is it any wonder that folks like this woman on Oprah sound the way that she do? She's given up hope, evidently. And we need hope. We need hope better than a pig needs slop in the summertime.
Oh, well, that's always been my thing. I mean, people say, oh, this election is horrible. Those two are slinging mud at one another. I tell me, you got to find somebody you can vote for, not against. You don't go in there and vote against, oh, I'm going to get rid of Bush. I mean, you know, that Kerry's got a witch for a wife. You know, you got to go out there and vote for someone. For. I don't care who. Used to be a wrestling promotion here in town I used to be a part of. And I used to go around these kids to register to vote. And they said, oh, I don't know. I don't want to vote for that, you know. Idiot, you know, I mean, you know, Bush or Kerry. I said, no, don't vote. Just vote. Just get out there. Once you start going and voting after a couple of years, then it'll become part of your routine. You'll get used to it. You'll know it's part of your life. It's part of your birthright here in this country. You know?
Well, it's the birthright, but then it's also something that you got to fight for, and it was disturbing to hear that woman say that she wouldn't go out there and fight for it again, especially if she's black.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that's what we're known for. That's the civil rights movement right there, you know, getting chased by dogs and sprayed by fire hoses and whatnot. I mean, she's evidently forgotten her history.
Yes.
You know, a samurai would view that as dishonorable.
But I don't know. What do you think?
About what? About
people voting. Don't you think they should vote for?
Yeah,
like
now this is the big problem.
Or Bush?
I think the problem in the past is people have voted for what they perceive to be the lesser of two evils. That they didn't like either major candidate. And you notice I say major candidate because this year, and I wanted to touch on as well, is how the media has frozen out all the other candidates. I mean, we have to face one thing about Ross Perot. He got a lot of press.
Well, he had $13 billion.
But he still got a lot of press. This year, any candidate other than Kerry and Bush are being frozen out by every network, every newspaper other than, you know, the very independent ones.
Well, they won't let Nader in the debates. And they got Bednarik and them having a debate
tomorrow
morning.
That's pure cowardice, by the way.
I mean,
really. You know, you got to figure. You know, Ralph Nader against George W. Bush in a debate, that's like, first of all, that's like Mike Tyson versus Urkel.
Yeah.
No, I take that back.
Okay.
That's like Mike Tyson with brass knuckles against Urkel.
Yes.
W wouldn't stand a chance, and they know this. They know that little retard would get slapped like a dizzy little monkey if Ralph Nader got in there. I mean, really, you're talking about a man who, for the past 30, 40 years, has fought the forces of evil. Let me tell you something about Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader is about as close to a real-life Jedi as you're going to get. Now, you know the whole thing with Anakin and Attack of the Clones is he didn't get married to Queen Amidala. You know, I'm sorry, he did get married to Queen Amidala when he wasn't supposed to because the Jedi are supposed to be celibate like monks. And whatnot, like, okay, well, you know, Ralph Nader went his whole life. He's 70 years old. You know, I know he had to have gotten some at some point, but he never got married. Maybe Jane Fonda.
He doesn't drive a car either.
Well, maybe Jane Fonda and him hit it back in the 60s. But other than that, I seriously doubt. You know, Nader and Hanoi Jane. But other than that, I seriously doubt. You know, Ralph Nader. No, Ralph Nader has never had any kids. He's never,
doesn't drive.
He's very frugal,
and he hardly ever blinks his eyes too. If you notice that,
But do you know what though? The guy is a true soldier, and that's what you want. That's what you want. Someone in there that's gonna die for you. You want someone in there that's gonna fight like a superhero for you. And that's what Nader is. And that's why they're afraid of him. That's why the Democratic Party is engaged in all these dirty tricks, you know, against him, taking him off state ballots and whatnot, sabotaging his campaign. That's why they're afraid of him. They don't want him in a debate. Kerry would get beat, but W would sure enough get turned to absolute powder if oh my God, Nader would rule that debate and they notice.
Yeah, but it would kill Kerry more than Bush. I mean, last time around, they had Buchanan there. They froze Buchanan out because he was running as a Reform Party candidate. They froze him out of the debates. And did the same thing the second time that Perot ran. They locked him out, too. It's funny. There's got to be some level. I mean, I think if you get on the ballots in at least 40 states, you should be put in the debates. It doesn't matter if you're whatever party you're from, the Green Party,
Bingo.
You know, whatever. If you're on enough ballots, I say 40 states, because that means you're you know, majority of the country, 10 states, well, you know, and you should be in those debates. And then look who's running these debates.
Yes.
The Commission on Presidential Debates is funded by General Motors and all these companies. And before these, I was at a debate years ago in Chicago, and they have tents. General Motors has a tent. They bring all their high rollers in, and they have, sounds like Vegas, but they have parties, and they have dancing girls out in front of the arena and all this stuff. And they seat all their donors and all their sales clients right in front of the candidates. You know, it's just nuts.
And let's bring up another point, too. And Andy Rooney on 60 Minutes Sunday night.
Is he still alive?
He's still alive and kicking. And he brought up an excellent point about voting and how now corporations are sponsoring campaigns. Uh-oh.
Darth Vader has entered the chat room, so
is
Boba Fett and Yoda.
We're in trouble. But no, how major corporations are now sponsoring ad campaigns to tie in with the voting. For example, Kenneth Cole has a campaign going on about vote. Are you putting us on? Because it's a manufacturer of clothing. And Andy Rooney brought up a good point, how these corporations really could care less if you vote or not. But what a great way to tie in and act like you're socially conscious. Uh-oh, he found something. Stop. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, our entire electoral system needs an enema really, really bad, like a crackhead needs a hit. That bad, you know what I'm saying? First of all, we got to get rid of the Electoral College.
I agree.
We got to get rid of that. The popular vote is the only thing that we need to be going by. The second thing is that we have to have free airtime, free equal time, and free advertising. I mean, we have to make sure that it doesn't cost anything to run for president. That way, our candidates can't be bribed. Mm-hmm. That way, if somebody's an a-hole, they're an a-hole because they're naturally one, not because they've been paid to be one. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I
I really think, you know, that the human race is leaning away from that than toward that. So if you take the money factor away, things will just be better all the way
around. R2-D2 has entered the chat room. I'm going to get sued by Lucas for all these characters in the room. Anyway, now, you know, I agree with you on that. I think since we are paying for PBS, I think an hour a week divided amongst the candidates, each of them gets an hour for 10 weeks, whatever it is, that should be given over to them on PBS because we're paying for that. You know, it's corporation for public, whatever it is. That's us. That's BS. We're paying for that. Give up an hour a week to all these candidates. They could speak their piece for free. No commercial break. Just a straight hour. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. We need maybe every Sunday candidate night. From the KKK to the Peace and Freedom Party and everybody in between.
Well, I don't know about all that.
No, seriously.
But let's talk about the debate.
I look like Tiger Woods with dreadlocks and a goatee. And if I'm saying that it's okay for David Duke to run for president, what is that? I mean, you know, we're supposed to be for civil liberties. What is the fear? The fear is that, oh, if we have communism, then Stalin will come out the ground like a zombie from a George Romero movie. No. You have free universal health care in Amsterdam. There's no troops in the streets. You might have homeless teenagers who tried to defect and didn't have no money and wound up hooked on methadone on the streets, but you ain't had no troops in the streets in Amsterdam. So you can have free universal health care without troops in the streets, okay? So the thing is that if I'm saying that it's okay for David Duke to run for president, then it just goes to show it's okay to put me in power. I am not a threat. You know, just because I tax the rich
don't mean I'm a censor. You have as much chance being president as I do.
Huh?
I think you have as much chance of being president as I do. No offense, but our bank accounts don't have 30 million or 100 million in them to run. I mean, you have to be a millionaire to run.
Multi-millionaire.
Look at Nader. Nader's the same. He's got the name, but without the money, he's dead in the water.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, see, that's the key. We need to take the money out of the equation. That's the key. We have to take the money out of politics. Or else we'll never
have a
democracy.
Jar Jar Binks has now entered the.
Or else we'll never have a democracy. We have to. It's like, you know what it is? It's like the Exorcist. It's like an evil spirit. You know, you got to exorcise the money.
Not like any of that. It's a chat room. They're changing characters left and right. It's hilarious.
So you got to. Well, I'm glad they're having
fun. You got to lighten it up. Yes. What about the debate?
Though, we have to exorcise like an evil spirit. We have to exorcise money, particularly big money, corporate money, out of politics. Toot sweet, we have to. We'll never have a democracy otherwise. And we'll never be in a position to talk about somebody like Castro. We'll be hypocrites at most. Because the thing is that, you know, it's not democratic. If you, okay, what did every child in
Spock
America,
is in the chat room now. Yeah. What is prosper.
What is every child raised with in America? One day, you can grow up to become president. Well, that's not true.
No.
Not unless you
it's
win
not
the
realistic.
Lottery. Not unless
yes.
you win megabucks.
Well,
but that's not right. That's not democratic. So we got to change that.
Yeah, and Bones McCoy has just entered the chat. I thought he was dead. But what about the debate? We got the big debate coming up tomorrow. Right now, the electoral count, according to the Hardball by MSNBC, it's Bush has got 217 electoral votes versus Kerry's 200. I'm going to go on a stretch. I think Bush is going to run away with this. I think he's going to win it by at least 14%.
If he wins the debate. Now, Kerry might still win the debate.
I think it's pretty much over with. That swift boat thing just buried Kerry.
They're
flip-flopping over Iraq.
But look at the polls. And that's the other thing. Have you guys noticed how everybody's being polled like every other second now? But look at the polls. It's still a very close call with the polls, even with the
Joseph
Ralph Nader.
Stalin is now entered the room. I thought he was dead, too.
Yeah.
You have to ask yourself, you know, who's doing the polls and who's being polled? Because, you know, they're not polling my neighborhood. I live in Crack Alley. I sure as hell know that, you know, 50% of Crack Alley is not going to go for W. So they're not polling my neighborhood. Hmm. You know, they're polling Connecticut or someplace. So don't be fooled by the polls. Maybe they shouldn't even have polls anymore.
No.
I've said that, too. A month before election, they should stop all polling.
Yeah.
Hold it, but
seriously,
I don't know.
You know, you're not supposed to see the bride before the wedding.
That's bad luck.
But my point about logic. But you know what? The people of Crack Alley, are they going to go vote?
Well, that depends.
Yes.
That depends, you know. Mm. But see, you know, it's been written on the internet, you know, that Kerry is not doing as much as he should be, you know, to mobilize the black vote because he's afraid that if he mobilizes the black vote, he'll lose the white racist vote. He's gonna have to learn to pick. If Kerry wants to win, and he can still win, but if he wants to win. He's going to have to become Nader.
Well, he's going to have to become Clinton.
Clinton.
No, he already is Clinton. That's the problem.
No,
he's got to have the
charisma.
No,
that's surface. He's Clinton in every way that counts. Oh, but speaking of hemp because we all know smoked.
This is a no hemp zone, isn't it?
That's right.
This is from the book. This is
where
from
am
the
I
book.
At? No, I know better in these studios.
This is from the book The Emperor Wears No Clothes by Jack Hare. I talked to Jack Hare. He just recently suffered a stroke. I hope he's doing okay. He has a book with a $100,000 bounty. If you can prove so much as a sentence of his book wrong, you win $100,000. And his number is 818-988-6210. That's 1-818-988-6210. And his website is jackhare.com, and that's jackhere.com. Now, here's what he says in his book. One more example of the importance of hemp. 5 years after cannabis hemp was outlawed in 1937, it was promptly reintroduced for the World War II effort in 1942. So when a young pilot, George Bush, this is W's daddy, bailed out of his burning airplane after a battle over the Pacific, little did he know, parts of his aircraft engine were lubricated with cannabis hemp seed oil. B, 100% of his life-saving parachute webbing was made from U.S.-grown cannabis hemp. C, virtually all the rigging and ropes of the ship that pulled him in were made of cannabis hemp. D, the fire hoses on the ship, as were those in the schools he had attended, were woven from cannabis hemp. And finally, as young George Bush stood safely on the deck, his shoes' durable stitching was of cannabis hemp, as it is in all good leather and military shoes to this day. Yes, Bush has spent a good deal of his career eradicating the cannabis plant and enforcing laws to make certain that no one will learn of this information, possibly including himself. Now, again, if you want to prove that wrong, if you can prove that wrong, you've just won $100,000. But I doubt you can.
Oh, hello. I like to try.
Well, again, that number is 1-818-988-6210. And that's Jack Hare. And his last name is H-E-R-E-R. So, yeah, you know, I mean, this is nothing new. You know, not to mention the fact that marijuana itself is non-lethal. The drug war needs to end, but Kerry's for the drug war. And for that and that alone, I can't vote for Kerry because the drug war is decimating the black community. You know, the drug war is to the black community what Nazism is to Jews. I mean, 50% of the prison population right now is black because of the drug war. You know, the drug war is destroying us. You know, so as long as Kerry supports that, I can't support Kerry, even if it means, God help me, lasting another 4 years under this inbred idiot king that we've got in charge now.
Wow. Anyway, we only got 6 minutes, but I'm going to go through the debate. You going to watch the debate tomorrow? It'll be live.
I think I'll be on the air, won't I?
Well, forget about it. Actually, they had a debate tonight. I want to mention my friends over at SmackDown Your Vote had a debate between Mick Foley and John Bradshaw Layfield down in the same arena where the Bush and Kerry debate is going to be held.
That's
already
over
with.
That I want to see.
Over with as we speak, I think. It's already over with.
You know, I can miss Kerry and W, but you know what? I'll run over
my mama. Anyway, I'm going to get to some of the things that Kerry's got to do tomorrow. It's a checklist for John Kerry. They don't have him to be real, be himself. Don't be some phony baloney. Be straightforward and concise because he's been in the Senate so many years. He's used to giving long, drawn-out answers. He's got to be to the point and hit all his spots. And attack, but calmly and respectfully. Yeah, true. You can't go out there and just annihilate Bush. He's got to be doing it in a slowly way. That's why I said just peel away at each other. They can't just go out and say, you're an idiot, you're an ass. You know, just nice and slow and be respectful. Thank you, Mr. President.
That's why I want to see Mick Foley and JDL. JDL.
John Bradshaw.
Yeah, that's what I want to see. That's the debate I can't miss.
And establish a critique and stick to it. He's got to decide what he's going to hit Bush on and stick to it. Don't change. Decide once and for all whether he would have gone to war in Iraq. And for Bush, Bush has to be humble. Bush is known to give this little smirk sometimes. He's got to control that. And it's like this little pissed off look he gives a lot too. He's got to be nice and humble. Don't look at your watch like his father did. Be careful about the guard issue. Don't, because that's still a problem. I mean, he's had a problem with the guard issue. I mean,
is insane.
None
of the things that you mentioned have anything to do with helping the country. You know, feeding the poor, solving our problems, fixing what's broken, bringing peace to the world. Mm. All I hear is you know, act like a robot, pretend like you're being blocked on some stage play. I mean, you know, that's just ridiculous. You know, that's why I like Nader, because again, the guy's been wearing the same suit for the past 20 years. You know, he doesn't care about any of that superficial, showy stuff. He's real.
Actually,
we need that.
Jimmy Diggs recorded the debate between Foley and JBL.
Praise the Lord. How can I get a copy?
We can have a showing of it at the studio for anyone who missed it. I don't know how we're going to show it here. Oh, and the computer, I guess. But
yes.
Okay, and for Bush, be careful. Honor Kerry's service, which he's been doing. He was on O'Reilly the last 3 nights, and he's mentioned he's honoring Kerry's service. And choose a message about Kerry, but be careful. They want him to sound too condescending to Kerry, and avoid a pants-down moment. Don't be like Gerald Ford. I remember he was debating Jimmy Carter.
Oh, yes.
He denied that Poland was part of the Soviet bloc. Everybody's like, what is he thinking? I mean, has he been reading the papers the last 20 years or what? But a lot of it's for the TV cameras, granted. I mean, they got to look a certain way. They got, you know, all that's visual because, you know, the networks aren't going along with, so far, they haven't signed on to the agreement, this 32-page agreement for this debate where the only certain camera angles are going to be allowed. They can't get reaction shots from the candidates because they want to avoid, you know, last time around was Al Gore with the, you know, those sighs, and then he caught Bush looking
who
at his watch.
Who notices these things? Who's that anal? That's insane.
Well,
did anyone
it's the
ever
candidates.
Bother to ask,
it's the two parties.
That's insane.
That's
did anyone ever bother to ask Gore, oh, do you think that Occidental Oil, who you've been profiting from for so long, would influence you to go to war for oil? That's a good question. I don't care if he sighs off camera. That is ridiculous. You know where all this got started? Mm. Nixon and Kennedy.
Oh, yes.
When Nixon got sweaty on camera.
Yep.
And people blamed that for his loss.
Yeah. Well, they say if you listen to the debate on the radio, people thought
Nixon won
the debate. If you watched it, Kennedy.
I mean, I'm no fan of Nixon, but you see what I mean. If you're going to judge the man the right way.
Exactly.
Not because he got sweaty. Everybody gets sweaty. Hell, I mean, who don't get sweaty?
Well, you know, Nixon was the only president with an X in his name.
Yes.
So, but anyway.
I hear our closing music.
Is that
the music's
we got our
revving
closing
up.
Music. We got to wrap it up.
The X in the name means something, too?
It's a little trivia. He's our only president with the X in his name.
But could that have ever had, like, any psychological effect on people? No. Need to look at the platforms, the resumes, the positions on the issues. I don't care about your X in your name or how sweaty you are if you sigh off camera. It's insane.
Well, that's great. Well, no, that's a great closing comment.
Sabi, want to thank you.
Thank you
for joining us. And
to
next
to
week we have
tell us
a lady from Votergasm is going to be on here.
That's it?
Yes.
Subject to discussion.
We'll leave that hanging for for next week. Let you all guess what Votergasm is. If you listen to Rush Limbaugh, you know.
You've been listening to Subject to Discussion on LVRocks.com. 8 p.m. Wednesday, Saab Lofton Show is Thursday night, 9 p.m. www.klav1230am.com. Saab, again, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Good night.
Good night.
A pleasant tomorrow.
Good night, everybody.